Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Follow the Lead, a Christian Leaders podcast, helping everyday faith-driven executives and entrepreneurs seal their identity in Christ, release control, and embrace peace. Powered by Greg Fay Insurance. If you haven't talked to my man Greg Fay yet, do it for the coverage you need with all the storms happening this spring. Don't wait to talk to Greg Fay today. Go to GregFayInsurance.com. Today on the podcast, Tasha June. Tasha is this Korean-American biracial writer who gives such a unique perspective on what it means to grow up when you don't feel like you fit in. We have an incredible conversation about what it means to look for home, about spaces of belonging, about just her identity and what that journey was like. I think you're going to absolutely love it. She's a great writer. Wow. She's overwhelming with how good she is with words. I think you're going to enjoy and really value this conversation. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Tasha June. Tasha, thank you so much for being on here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, I know you've done a lot of things over your life, and there's a lot of world experience that you've had that we're going to get into, but I'm kind of curious, how would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
That's such a hard word, if I'm honest. Hard word for me. I think the way that I've thought about calling has changed over time, has shifted. You know, a long time ago, I thought I was called into a specific kind of full-time ministry. And I think at the time that was the place where I was supposed to be and go. But as my family and I, as my husband and I were moved out of that and what it looked like what the job description was, there was a really confusing time where I didn't understand, you know, calling. I thought that was going to be for the rest of my life. What I've come to kind of embrace and understand about it, and what I would say now, is one, that I was created to create spaces of belonging. And I do that in a number of ways. I do that through writing, through sharing stories, through gathering people together to share their stories, and all with the heart to give safe spaces to heal and also to move closer to God. So it's not really a typical answer. I don't know. Maybe it is, but that's kind of where I'm at this point. And I think it can shift. The way that I tell stories might shift over time, and that's okay. So, yeah.
I love it. I think it's a beautiful representation of your heart. And as I've gotten to know your story through the research and preparation, I've learned that you're an incredible storyteller. I interview a lot of authors, but there's a lot less writers than there are authors, if that makes, you know, but you seem to have a love for words and a love for story. And I'm kind of curious, how did you develop that storytelling muscle? When did you know that that was a part of your identity?
Yeah, thank you for that. As a child, I always had a really big curious mind and heart. I think they're connected. I think part of that, and I share about this in my book, but part of that came from, you know, just trying to understand my parents and these two worlds that they brought into our home that made me who I am, but also, you know, growing up feeling like there were a lot of unanswered questions. Mm. And there were a lot of things that always felt a lot bigger than me, that didn't make sense to me. And so I think I sought out stories because of that. And then I was always kind of looking for a reflection of our story in the world out there. So whether that was in talking to other friends as a kid, I remember as a kid having deep conversations, you know, in grade school, you know, trying to understand people's family makeup and, you know, I think to make sense of my own, but I mean, it's always been an interest, as far back as I can remember. So that I think too, you know, having a mom whose first language was different than mine and feeling some of the tensions of things lost in translation between us has also been another reason that I've wanted to search out stories that made sense of our situation, but also just explained the fact that we were different, you know, but so knit together, you know, in a family. So I just, yeah, I think it started there. And then, you know, as a kid, when I started reading on my own, I just found such a home in stories and some of the longings expressed, the ways that, you know, a writer could create a character or share about themselves. But I think I read more fiction as a kid, you know, create a character that could express some of the things that I felt but didn't have words for. So that, I mean, I remember that very young, even in, you know, picture books and then later in chapter books, just feeling like there was some kind of magic there, some kind of sense that I wasn't alone in the world in some of the ways that I felt most alone.
I think that there are a lot of leaders listening who want to be better storytellers because story is such a powerful way to transform movement. And I see you use that as a tool throughout your writing, whether that's on your Substack or in your book. If you were going to sit down with a leader who's like, okay, Tasha, make me a better storyteller, what are some of the things that you would recommend, just practical application kind of stuff? What can we do to be better at telling stories?
Oh, there's so many things, but I think just a few of the things that have been really important to me and that I see in other storytellers that I admire. One is the ability to get quiet and be honest with ourselves about what's going on in our inner worlds, which I don't know if that's an ability. I feel it takes some courage and it takes some patience and some time to be able to do that. So one, getting honest with ourselves, and a lot of times that means finding space and quiet for that, you know, space to kind of process however best you process. For me, at a young age, it was journaling and just giving a place, making a space for some of that inner world to be released and to work through and to see and acknowledge. So that, I also think reading other stories and stories that you gravitate towards, stories that are different than you know, the kind that you're used to, listening to other people's stories, just being someone who not just wants to be, I mean, I guess hungry is a good word, but not just to consume them, but to really receive the stories that either you're reading or that you're listening to. And again, have some space to kind of process through what you're hearing and what this person's telling you. And the question that's always in the back of my mind is, you know, if we all belong to one another, what do I do with this story in light of that? Whether I agree with it, find comfort in it, find discomfort, you know, just what do I do with that in light of the fact that we, you know, we're all created to reflect the image of God and we belong to each other. So kind of keeping that back there and giving space for stories to change you too. So I think that all of those things, I think, really impact the way we, you know, can sit with our own stories. And, you know, we can get through classes about how to deliver stories, but I think if we don't first acknowledge, you know, our stories and the stories of those around us, it's really hard, I think, to tell an honest story. So
that's beautiful. Do you have any daily disciplines that you do to help, you know, kind of sit in that quietness, or kind of what are some of the things that your routines or practices, even with your family too? I love to steal good family practices, you know, whenever I can. So I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on some of those daily disciplines.
Sure. You know, I think we try to go for walks as a family, and we're at the stage where not everyone loves to do that. And so we don't force it. You know, I think during COVID, we went for walks as a family a lot, and it was good, and everyone wanted to kind of get out of the house. Now we have a couple older ones that, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to be seen on a walk with the whole family. And so they don't all go, but I do find that when we do go, it does create some space for us as a family. And then me personally, I think just being out in nature is really impactful. Just quiets my soul, just reminds me of how big the world is, and not in an overwhelming way, in a really comforting way. So that is, like, as far as family rhythms, that along with that, sometimes we're pretty, we're not always strict with bedtimes and like quiet time in the evening, but we kind of have a little bit of a structure to our days. And when we can, we try to keep that just so there's some quiet space in the day as much as we can. I mean, it's a pretty loose thing. for me personally, journaling, again, is just something, it's the way that I can release a lot of what's been going on in the day. And it's my imperfect space. There's no editing there. It's scribbling. And, you know, that's kind of my rule. It's just the place to kind of pour out my heart to God, and anything is okay. Anything that needs to come out. So I usually do that in the evening. And if I don't do that, I will often wake in the middle of the night because it's such a regular thing for me that sometimes I'll wake in the middle of the night with all of that. I can feel it in my body if I don't do it. Yeah. And so I don't always get up and, you know, journal then, but I could just tell the difference, I guess, when I am doing that regularly, when I've skipped a few days. Just it feels very much like I'm holding all of that inside, and I haven't, even though I say that's all, you know, God has access to all of that, if I don't physically choose to release it, it feels like it weighs me down. So those are a couple things.
I love that. But, I love that. I never thought I would say this, but I miss COVID for moments like the walks.
Yeah.
Like just that slower pace felt so healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. There are little things, little tidbits from that time that I look back on and kind of, you know, I don't wish for the what was going on, but I do miss some of the rhythms and some of the things we did as a family then, for sure.
One of the questions I love to ask authors who share from such a personal place like you do is, how do you know when it's safe to release a story to the world? Mm-hmm. And like specifically your mom and dad are really tied into this book. I would love to hear about that process of including them and that whole kind of journey for you.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good question. It's never been black or white for me. But I will say, so, and I've shared this with others before, I started this book decades ago in a college memoir class. And obviously, I hadn't lived enough to write most of it, but we did a little excerpt of a memoir, and all that would come out were stories about my mom. And I think at the time, you know, it was stuff that I hadn't worked through, stories that she had offered to me that I hadn't really received, I'd kind of rejected or kind of wanted to hide. And so at that time, I remember talking to my mom, and this was a class of 12 people. It wasn't, you know, we weren't publishing anything, but the end product was us reading our, you know, little mini memoir to the rest of the class. So I remember asking her then if it was okay to write about some of the stories she had shared with me. At the time, it was a yes. And then throughout the years, as she's kind of shared more, or we've gone back and forth about some of these stories, as I've started to write in a way that was more public, you know, it's a lot of the stuff that I was processing through were very much related to stories that she shared with me. And so, again, it was going and having a conversation with her about what was okay to share. And then there was a point in time where she said, you know, anything that I share with you is okay for you to write about. So just kind of gave me that permission. But I think in the writing process, there's a lot in the book that I write, but there's a lot I also did not share. So even though she gave me permission throughout the writing process, I would kind of feel like, you know, this just feels too tender. So kind of just making a decision as the one writing it out, like, I don't think I want to share that. Whether that was for me or for someone else, like, you know, my parents, or other people in the book. So there's that aspect of, you know, getting permission and also feeling like thinking through, like, what's the point? Is this just for shock value, or is this something that is very much a part of the story that can be used to illuminate someone else's story? And like you were saying earlier, bring some healing or give some space for someone else's, you know, story or hurts or pain or something to be named in a way maybe it hasn't been before. So that really felt worth it to me. I think too, a lot of this I've sat with for a long time. So, most of it isn't fresh, as in it, the first time that I'm either sharing this with another person, it's not, you know, something that my mom has shared with me or my dad, and then I'm immediately writing it. It's something that I've sat with for decades, and have processed with others and sometimes written about it before. And so while I've had some people say, wow, you shared that felt like a lot. I feel almost removed because it's been, you know, there's been some time of processing through the stories that are shared. So, yeah. So I think, you know, yeah, time is important. And yeah.
And it, well, so this is what I'll say, right, is you've clearly done the work, right? It doesn't feel like you're spilling your guts in an unhealthy way as much as it does. It's like, I'm telling you this story about my healing so that maybe you can take a shorter version there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely wanting to offer just some language, you know, for others to kind of find themselves in the stories.
You know, it might be helpful for some of our listeners who haven't picked up a copy of the book yet to kind of give us a background of your story, kind of from a 30,000 viewpoint. I realize that you and I have both looked at the book and, you know, obviously you wrote the book, so you lived it, but maybe kind of give everybody a background of your upbringing and what that was like.
Sure. Yeah. So I am a biracial Korean American, and my dad is from California. He's Caucasian or white. And my mom immigrated to the U.S. from Korea. And so I grew up with both of their worlds very present in my home. It was my upbringing was very much a mix of Korean and American culture. So that's kind of where the story begins. And it begins also with a dream that my mom had about this, the night sky and one of the stars turning into a tiger, and her telling me, oh, the tiger then turned into you, which, you know, as a child is so strange, but I hung on to this because it felt like, there was so much purpose and meaning in this dream that she had, the story that she was telling me about, you know, myself. And I didn't believe in any of it. So I would just kind of hang on to it. And so growing up, I felt very much, you know, at home in those two worlds. But then as I got a little older, it started to feel more and more difficult to hold the tension of my reality of being both, you know, both Korean, white and Korean, white and Asian, you know, and holding these worlds together. And so the book really is about holding that tension. And then as I started in my faith journey, feeling like it didn't fit there as well. And so received a lot of messages like your identity is in Christ, as if that meant my ethnic identity didn't matter. And so me grappling with what does the Bible actually say, and who is Jesus really? And if Jesus loves us as much as I've been told, shouldn't some of this stuff matter to him as well? And so it's me kind of grappling with some of that, walking through a long period of rejecting a lot of parts of myself, and then coming back around to embracing how I've been created to be, and
one of the themes of the book is this this isolation. I think the term that you use is like social wilderness in the world that you kind of grew up in. That's a beautiful term for it. At what age did you really realize that it was hard to fit anywhere? And then also, even in college, in your Korean class, there's this incredible story that you kind of tell. Yeah. I'm wondering if you could kind of just take us in both of those places.
And what
that was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, along with what I shared in the beginning about just kind of being curious and looking for, trying to find my family represented or my situation represented in stories, that kind of goes along with what you're asking, because I think I was always looking for home. So what is home really? And, you know, kind of out there. And so as a kid, when we traveled to Korea the first time I shared this, I thought we're going home and I'm going to fit in here. You know, just felt like this is, you know, the food that I love the most is going to be everywhere. And it was. And then I also faced the reality for the first time. Oh, people don't think that I'm Korean. I'm not seen as a Korean, treated a certain way by other Korean kids because I'm, you know, I have mixed blood, and which I had no idea was a thing until my sister and I were receiving just a lot of negative attention. So there was that. And then you know, as I came back around in college, like the story that you brought up, was very much at a point where I was trying to go back and learn to embrace that part of me. And so, yeah, I took a Korean class, and it was a really small class. And I walked in, and the only other students, they were all Korean students who I knew right away could speak fluently. Mm. So I think they were getting an easy credit. And I, again, was in this situation where I was like, okay, I'm the only one here who, you know, just, you know, one of these doesn't fit like the other. So that was really clear. And it felt just, it was really humbling to sit there and, you know, realize, okay, there's so much I still don't know. I can't pick this up quickly. And everyone around me already speaks. And so I ended up dropping the class because it was just painful to be in there. And, feel like I don't belong, but I so much want to grasp this part of, you know, who I am, but couldn't find many places to be able to do that.
Hey guys, just pausing this conversation with Tasha to remind you to check out our sponsors. Trent Bargy over at Elevate Real Estate is doing everything he can to help you get into your next home. So whether that's a forever home, a dream home, or an investment property, talk to my man Trent today. He wants to help you. Go to Elevate Real Estate. The link's in the show notes. He can help you take your next step to living happily ever after in your forever home. Speaking of homes, do me a favor and check out my 5-Star Home Services. 5-Star is this incredible group of family-owned business, profit-on-purpose mentality, people who want to help your HVAC, plumbing, and electrical. They really help you make all the maintenance in your home possible. And they've got a brand new program out where you can actually subscribe to home maintenance services. I think it's worth checking out. Go to my5starhomeservices.com. Tell them Tony sent you. Such a great organization. Thankful for all of our sponsors who make this show possible. And now, without any further ado, let's finish up this conversation with Tasha.
What's also interesting is, and you write about this in the book, is this ministry trip to Germany, this mission trip to Germany, and kind of some of the pushback that you received from not going to an Asian country and just that whole process. Can you kind of talk about that experience, one, deciding to go to Germany, and then what it was like? I mean, it feels like a whole nother layer of not belonging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was a, I was like, wow, that was, it was a powerful moment.
Yeah. That whole conversation about not going to an Asian country, that was just from a friend. We were involved in the same ministry. And so I had had experiences going on short trips to Germany prior to that, trying to decide whether I was going to move there after I graduated or not. And then I'd also been on a short trip back to Japan, which is where I lived as a kid, lived overseas for 4 years as a child. So it's like my upbringing was in a different Asian country. But so had this conversation and definitely felt like, yes, I could go back to Japan. And there was a sense of familiarity and like this ability to connect there. And I knew some of the language. But ultimately decided to go to Germany. And mostly at that point, it was because there was a team of people. I didn't really want to go alone to Japan. And I knew some other people that were going, and that felt really important to me. And so decided to go without really thinking about the fact how crazy it was, you know, just that it's this whole other country. But I did have some familiarity there as well, I guess. So moved there and that is kind of it's so funny to me that this place so far from home in any sense of the word, when you look at my upbringing, but then also, you know, far from home as I knew it at that point in time, is where God really kind of got my attention and, you know, so far from home. And yet what he was kind of rebuilding and pursuing me to kind of look at, some of these places I didn't want to look at because they felt too painful. So, and met a lot of people there that also lived in these worlds, you know, these multiple worlds, and we're trying to reconcile that. And so it's almost like being that far away just removed a lot of the distractions that I could hold on to prior and just, you know, laid everything out for what it was. So unexpected, but
a blessing. Yeah. I think God works like that in so many opportunities. The writing is not, the writing is a lot about holding the tension of belonging, and you do so really well with your faith as a background of it all, right? So this is a book that I would call like sneaky Jesus. It's not, the book is not about Christ, but it's clear that you can't dive into this belonging idea without Christ. And so I'm curious about how your theology developed either prior to the writing, before you put it all on paper, or if it's anything like me where my theology develops sometimes as I'm writing it out. I'd be interested to hear some of your thoughts around that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely an in-process person. And I think as I wrote, yes, definitely things were coming together. Or it was just things that, you know, you already believe. But until you have a chance to put it on paper or express it, sometimes it feels like it's all disconnected in there, you know. I mean, I think for me, really, this has always, it's definitely a story about my ethnic identity. But for me, what I've come to understand is that's so tied to my relationship with Christ. And so always has been my search for that. I mean, I see them now instead of as two separate things, like very much together. And I think that was the heart of this book for me, because, you know, we talked about Germany, I came to this dead end where I had learned so many things theologically. I was a, you know, a full-time missionary. I was expressing some of those things to those that I worked with and those that I was, you know, trying to minister to. And in the back of my mind, you know, as I was telling people that God loved them, that they were precious to God, you know, that who they were mattered, I'm realizing in the back of my head that do I really believe that? So I'm expressing those things. But deep down inside, I'm still unsure. Does God love me? Does God know me to the extent that, you know, as I write about in the book, that Jesus would sit with me and have kimchi with me, you know, something that I was embarrassed by in other, you know, other, you know, social settings. And so that's kind of what I had to face, is the theology I had been taught and then what I actually believed, like what my actions were showing about what I said I believed. And then kind of like, you know, when I hit that dead end, it's like, do I really believe this? And if I don't, then I need to deal with that. I shouldn't be where I am. If I do, then it's going to mean a lot more for me. So there was kind of not a dead end. There was a fork in the road for me, a fork where I needed to kind of, you know, unpack a lot that I said that I believe. Not that it didn't matter up until that point, but I just, it was time to go deeper or be real about whether or not I really believed it. So yeah,
that's really well stated. There are a ton of Christian executives and entrepreneurs who are listening. And the reality is a lot of them are white males. And and I'm always trying to get better at how to hold belonging for people that don't look or look like me. And so I'm wondering if you could give me and other leaders who maybe have never grown up in a world that they didn't feel like they belonged in, how can we be better to stand with those individuals?
Yeah. I think, first of all, just so I have been through so many situations where I have been asked a question like that, or there have been efforts to grow in diversity, and it's felt like a problem to be fixed. And I do really think and believe in diversity is a beautiful God-given thing for any community, especially faith communities. But I think realizing that it's not something that can just be checked off, you know, like in a checklist, like do these few things and then it'll appear better or it'll be better. But I think moving towards whatever anyone can do to move towards more of an openness to the stories of others. We're kind of going full circle here, but I think that sounds simple, but I think that's really hard work. I think it takes a lot, again, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of honesty. And so, you know, we're in this time where I think everything is so polarized and, you know, you say one thing, I say one thing about race and it's like, I'm put into this box of a type of person, or you say something about faith and you're put, I mean, there's just, it's just really difficult right now. But I think anytime we can take one step, towards another's story that's different than ours, and really receive it, not just like read it to kind of check a box and say that you read it, but, you know, to I guess I'm talking about reading a story, but I also think moving towards people, actual people, and the stories that they embody, and receiving them and being willing to let that story change the way you think a little bit, like maybe without so much fear, or recognizing the fears that you have and naming them and being honest about them, because I think that opens us up a little bit more. That's a really simple thing, but I think it's really hard to actually do.
Well, and I find that it's just really easy to become insulated because we're naturally drawn to people that are similar. And so it's like, I never mean to be like in my heart, like I don't like, oh, let's just be insulated. But then there's a natural, like without an intentionality behind it, there's a natural deviation towards insulation of people that look like us. Right. And back to, I mean, that's kind of a big part of the writing, your writing in the book is like this whole idea of like, man, there was, everybody had a group but you in a lot of cases. And that's just a real tension that was on display that I thought was, man, like a lot of us have never grown up with that tension and it's real.
Yeah. I think too, also not being afraid to look at history and, you know, kind of giving some space to that as a spiritual activity. Because I mean, if we can look at history and then take it into our present relationships and reality, I think we will better move towards others.
Yeah, I love that the passage where they stack the 12 stones, but we, you know, as they're getting ready to cross the river, and it's such a reminder that remembrance is an act of worship.
Right. So true. Yeah.
I did want to ask about your Substack name is Shalom Sick Notes, and that's a term that you made up. I'm wondering if you could kind of give us, first of all, your Substack is really well done, and people should go and subscribe immediately, but tell us a little bit about the word and how it came to fruition.
Yeah. So the first time that I heard the word shalom and the definition for it, I just wanted to grab it up because it was just so beautiful. I loved learning, you know, that that's how people greeted each other, that there was this, you know, this desire, not just for peace and this appearance of peace or just peace, you know, feeling peace, but this wholeness, this desire for others to feel that. And, you know, I think what I've come to understand is that my search for home really was wholeness, you know, wholeness as a person, wholeness for my family, wholeness in communities, you know, so it extends so far out. And so alongside of that, you know, I've always felt homesick and kind of in my search for belonging. But I think what I realize it's deeper than searching for or feeling homesick for a certain place. I've kind of let that go because there isn't one, you know, necessarily on earth as we know it. And so what I realized was it's a sickness, a homesickness, shalom sickness for that wholeness for all of us. So I don't know. I mean, I've never heard anyone else say it. So I say that I made that up. I don't know if anyone else uses it. But yeah. And so it kind of drives a lot of my writing. It drives my hope and my interactions with others is just that I think we all have it. And it's a lot of the basis for, I think, the longings that most of us feel can go back to that and, you know, that desire for wholeness. So
I'll tell you that I did some research looking for the word's definition. Like I was trying to find it, like as if it was someone.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I came to your Facebook post, I think from 2022, that I found it. So you own all of the Google searches on it, just so you know.
Okay, great.
I have one more question for you, but before I ask it, I know that my podcast family is going to want to connect with you all over the interwebs. Where is the best place to learn all things Tasha? And is there a next book coming out? Can you tease it for us? I'm always curious about writers.
Nothing yet. Nothing official yet. There are definitely a lot of ideas. So, nothing yet, though. The best place, as far as social media goes, I'm probably on Instagram the most. And my handle is Tasha June B. And then again, my newsletter, that's where I kind of share more, you know, just heartfelt, deeper things. So those two places are great. I have a website. I haven't really touched it in a while, but that's also, it's TashaJune.com. So.
And the website's nice because you can get to everything else from there if you need to, right? So it's a really good starting point, which is, it's again, you should subscribe to our Substack and make sure you pick up a copy of the book. It's really, it's beautifully written. So it's almost written like a novel in the sense of, I feel like we're jumping in and out of your life, but then it's kind of intertwined with some really important biblical truths, I think. So that's definitely a skill. So
thank you.
Okay. Last question I love to ask people. It's an advice question. I'm going to ask you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, except I get to name the season of life that you're in.
Okay.
And I was thinking about this because there are so many moments in the book that are just beautiful moments in time. But I want to take you back to the day before you're getting ready to leave for Germany.
And
you're kind of in this pivotal moment of your life. If you were to pull up a chair in front of that younger version of yourself, sit knee to knee with her and look her in the eyes and just tell her, give her one piece of wisdom about the journey she's about to go on, what would you tell her?
Probably something simple. It probably would have terrified me then. But I think I would have said, you're going to feel really lost, like more lost than you're willing to admit, but it's going to be okay. I think that would be it.
That's beautiful. And then another, here's a bonus question is,
okay.
my podcast family loves to pray. And so, I'm wondering if there's a prayer that we could pray alongside you as this book continues to get into more and more hands, what's the prayer that's associated with the writing?
For me, it has always been, you know, 'cause it's so much about my story and myself, which can feel, and memoir is, I mean, it's one of my favorite forms of writing or reading, one of the things I love to read the most. But I think that people would find a reflection of themselves in it, in the stories, and that that would help them see their stories a little bit better and draw them to Jesus. And that's always been my prayer, is that digging up so much and offering so much vulnerability really wasn't just to be vulnerable, but really the hope was that it would give people permission to be vulnerable with themselves and with others and Jesus. So
that's so good. Tasha, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today and your story and the writing. I do believe that it's going to have a huge impact on a lot of people.
No, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
What a fun conversation. I love the shalom shtick and her ability to make up words and just honestly her heart. You know, I think it's so easy as someone who always felt like they belonged to not see the other side of that discussion. And that's why conversations like this are so important. And let me also just say this, as someone who reads a lot of books, who talks to a lot of authors, finding diversity can be sometimes really hard. And I think it's probably a symbol of the status of kind of where things are in the world. So I'm so thankful for Tasha's voice and just the work she's doing to help us wrestle with that. So important. I'm also thankful for all of you for being part of the podcast family. You know, you are the reason that I do all of this. So if there's anything I can do to help you, I'm easy to find at TW Milt or follow the number 2leadcoaching.com. Don't forget to sign up for our life and leadership newsletter. It goes out every single Wednesday where we put out our freshest thoughts and remind you of all the things that God is doing on this platform. So as always, I'm thankful for you. And remember, guys, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.